Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
I'm opening.
We have
an eye,
sort of a nostril,
two teeth.
One of the teeth has a small cavity.
Close call, folks, but I think we got here just in time.
Presented by Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro. This is Anatomy of a Movie. In-depth discussions and breakdowns of various movie titles. And now that you've seen the movie, let the dissection begin.
Buddy, welcome to Popcorn Talks Anatomy of a Movie, where today we're going to knock out Southpaw. I'm here with a very awesome, great. It's an honor to be with this panel today. I got Marissa on the far right.
Hello, everyone.
I have Steve in the right next to Marissa.
Hey, everybody. Steve Kaufman here.
And we worked. He was here for Entourage. Yes. We have a newcomer. Welcome.
Hi, Matt Ritter. How are you doing?
And we have James working the ones and twos in the board today. And as I said earlier today, we are going to be knocking out Southpaw. This is the latest from Anton Fuqua, starring Jake Gyllenhaal. So why don't we start, as we always do, with first impressions of the movie. We'll start off with you, Marissa.
I've thoroughly enjoyed this film overall. I mean, we know there's a lot of boxing films that have been made. So tonight is a nice, dramatic boxing film. Watching it, I mean, I personally, and I'll just preface this, I am a humongous Rocky fan. So while going into this film, I saw so many Rocky references that could be odes or unnecessary ties back to Rocky. But watching this, all I kept thinking was Rocky. But I love Rocky so much that I did enjoy this film.
Fair enough.
I was one of the few people who watched this film without seeing a trailer first.
Interesting.
Yeah. So Rachel McAdams, and we'll get to that part, pretty much floored me emotionally.
Interesting.
Like, wrecked me emotionally, because I thought I was literally just seeing Rocky, and she was gonna be Adrian, and this movie was just gonna keep going. Like, he's gonna come down and then come back up, and then, like, what?
That's a fascinating point, because we'll talk about trailering and marketing. There's been a lot being said, particularly this summer, about how trailers, quote-unquote, spoil movies. I want to know, how did you escape seeing any marketing on this movie?
Well, I saw honestly, all I saw was Monday Night Raw.
Okay.
They obviously paid for marketing, because they did a special on just Jake Gyllenhaal, all the work Jake Gyllenhaal did to become a boxer for this role. And that was enough to sell me. Where I was
gotcha.
Like, boxing movie, Jake Gyllenhaal, who does these transformations as an actor.
You know, what's interesting is I also did not see the trailer, too. I don't know how. I think it's summertime. I think sometimes, you know, during the summer, you're just more busy and you're just not sitting around as much. But I happen to have seen the movie this morning in an empty theater, which I think also colors your initial reaction to a movie. I connected a lot in the moment with the movie. I'm sitting there alone, almost crying in the theater. I think I'm a little more vulnerable. I was alone at the 9:30 a.m. showing of a pretty emotional movie.
Isn't it? When you are in a movie theater in that capacity, they're just sort of kind of like, it feels sort of kind of like, hey, this is my living room.
Yeah,
and if somebody walks in, you're like, get the fuck out of my
room. Yeah, no, there was one guy who, like, checked in. I was like, oh man. The buttons are kind of unbuttoned. I'm kind of a mess right now.
I saw Ant-Man like that last week. It was just me and it was a friend and I. We just got off a job and no one else was in the theater. Yeah. So we just talked about it.
But I have to ask, like, again, but you escaped seeing any trailers. You go to a lot of movies, I take it. And you didn't see this trailer.
So this is my first movie I've been to this summer. I've been so busy traveling and whatnot.
Fascinating.
I think that's why. That's got to be why. Because I'm sure I would have seen it on any movie this
Marissa,
summer.
Marissa, you saw a trailer for this.
I definitely saw the trailer. I'm a big fan of Jake Gyllenhaal and Rachel McAdams for both their works and their careers individually. And so they have a big enough repertoire that brought me to this film. Plus, boxing, just watching the trailer, I got a lot of Rocky references too. And again, I won't keep repeating myself.
Right.
That brought me to this film. So I knew going into it was going to be a nice, dramatic, sports-related, family drama-related film.
Interesting. I want to talk a little. Yeah, for me, I did see the trailer. And It was interesting. Like I said, we'll talk trailers a little bit, but I knew of the Rachel McAdams spoiler, mm-hmm. let's say. And, my first gut reaction to that was, oh, Jesus, why are they telling me that she dies? And then I realized because the movie is really not about their relationship. It's a father-daughter relationship. Mm-hmm. So I was sort of okay with that. Although, after listening, you two had completely different experiences than what I have. And my experience was, in all honesty, this is one of my bigger disappointments this summer. Ooh. I thought we had excellent performances. Strong performances throughout. However, they were stuck to me in a quagmire of trite plotting mm-hmm. and dangling subplots. Mm-hmm. And it lacked, for me, it lacked an emotional heft that would have brought me to the stand up and cheer mm-hmm. moment, like in a Rocky movie. It, as hard as Fuqua and team tried to manipulate me to go that way, there was never a point where I just like said, yeah, mm-hmm. like I never felt there was any comeuppance at all for the quote unquote villain. I walked out going, yeah, it didn't really have the emotional punch, pardon the pun, mm-hmm. that I had hoped it would in sports movies, not just boxing movies. Mm-hmm. I kept on throwing back to McFarland, a movie that I talked about much earlier this year.
Yeah.
And that movie, I got very emotional. And that's a sports movie about running. Uh-huh. Like, how do you make running exciting?
Yeah.
Boxing is exciting. I felt that the boxing scenes were filmed great. But then I, like you, Marissa, was thinking Rocky a lot. Mm-hmm. And in Rocky, I was so engaged in the boxing matches that this one, they were good, that he tried to be, but just he could not be John G. Avildsen or even Stallone for that matter.
And right? Let me be clear, we were talking about our initial reactions. Once we get into it, I will say I'm closer to where you stand than where I was alone in the theater. Really, I knew I was sort of being manipulated. You know, but it's like when his daughter slaps him, like, I feel something. You know what I mean?
But and I throw that to performance.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
She was, we'll talk performance, but she was amazing.
Yeah.
I thought she was great.
But yes, it was lacking in many, many ways.
It's yeah.
I think one of my biggest problems with this film was pacing. Mm-hmm. There were some scenes that lasted really long and some I felt like we just cut to the chase and some that could have been longer.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, we'll definitely get into
it. And I think
it,
on, I think on pacing, it's also on a macro level, too, that there are some things that should deserve, right. like, half the movie and then get nothing. And then there are some things that are, like, a training montage that, like, no, that's the whole thing.
Yeah. Really. And we're going to talk music, too, because I really thought that was another... There should have been. I wanted more James Horner. I wanted more James Horner than. It, no offense. I wanted more James than Eminem. I wanted more orchestral. Because that in a good sports movie too, I think helps manipulate an audience into to an exciting fervor.
Oh yeah.
So, but before we really dive into story, I want to talk. Why don't we start off with the genesis of this project? Because this is something that has been gestating for some time.
Mm.
And we were talking about this just before we came in here. And Marissa, I know you always have a wealth of information. Well, I'm going to throw it out there. At first, this was meant to be an Eminem project.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm just laughing because I'm just seeing how jacked Jake Gyllenhaal was.
Oh, yeah.
Just the idea of, I don't know how much Eminem weighs or his stature, but like, just the thought of him makes Sylvester Stallone seem huge.
Yeah, I was thinking he may have gone through the transformation because I don't doubt Eminem's like perseverance. Like I don't, I'm not going to take away from his attitude and what he would push for. Let's just face it, though. I mean, Eminem ain't Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not eventually, but not like Jake is.
Yeah.
No. But so. To add to that, yes, it was based off of Eminem kind of wanting to tell the second half of Eminem's life, going through downships, losing money, almost losing mm-hmm. the custody of his daughter, and losing a friend, that gestation of the story. But also, we know Jake Gyllenhaal can deliver a solid dramatic performance. And we know Eminem as a musician, not an actor. So if Eminem were to be Billy Hope, I don't think he could have delivered the more dramatic scenes that Jake definitely delivered.
Even as good as he was in 8 Mile, I agree. I mean, I think it would have lessened the stature of this movie. And again, because I had seen the trailer, one of the things in the trailer, they showed the opening scene of this movie, which is that thing of Jake Gyllenhaal, like, yeah, and the camera pulls back. Probably my favorite scene in the movie. I just loved it. But that, there's a snippet of that in the trailer. And no, you know, just seeing Jake Gyllenhaal's career and his transformations, especially his last three movies from, say, The Prisoners to Nightcrawler to this movie, you just know you're going to get this intense performance. And I'm like, oh, man, this looks really good. I can't see Eminem carrying this off.
I would go so far as to say that Jake Gyllenhaal salvaged this movie. I would argue
it was a different movie on paper when Eminem was attached.
Absolutely.
They were middleweight fighters.
Wow.
but also, I think they would have written more, just like 8 Mile was written, they would have written more to an ensemble. To an ensemble to support what Eminem, right, what Eminem could show.
But and also, I mean, this film was originally supposed to be developed by DreamWorks, and DreamWorks dropped out, and then Harvey Weinstein was attached. And we know the Weinstein brothers—they're really known for solid dramatic films.
Right.
So I think Weinstein did a great job delivering such a more gritty, emotional film.
Right. Yeah, and again, I just don't know. This movie, you know, rests on Jake Gyllenhaal's performance, but I also believe that his supporting cast, whether they get lost in subplotting or whatever, I really like the girl a lot. Una, forget her last name right now, but she was fantastic. What little even Rachel McAdams is in this movie, again, the scene where she dies.
Oh.
Is an extremely emotional scene that was so well handled and worked, and it's in major part because of Rachel McAdams and because of Jake.
Oh yeah,
right. I mean, now with you, how did that? You said that scene had a major impact. Without you seeing a trailer, was that as impactful?
Yeah, you know, it definitely threw me, and then. For a brief minute, I thought it was going to turn to a revenge action movie.
Yeah, like,
because I hadn't seen a trailer. I was like, oh, is this not going into the Rocky trope?
Right.
Like,
yeah,
are we going into the Punisher here? Is that like, right? I was like,
well,
oh, my God.
Rocky's, well, I guess in any
he's
of the Rockies.
He's avenging a friend,
yeah,
Rocky.
No, I just meant, like, it the took gun like violence three. When he took the gun with him to that. I was where are we going with this movie?
Oh, man. Right. One tiny thing about the Rachel McAdams death. I'm going to put on my nitpicker hat real quick. The police question him.
Right.
Did you see anything? He says nothing because he wants to handle it himself. There's a bullet inside of Rachel McAdams. That's registered to a gun.
Oh, you know what? When we talk story, I want to go into
this. Oh, you mean just the hot potato passing around of that gun that got
it? Yeah, the hot potato never mentioned it ever again. Yeah, there were no... we talk story.
When we get there, sorry.
But
listen, Ivan Drago should have been in jail for manslaughter for
true,
Apollo Creed.
True, because...
we let that
if
one
If he
slide.
Dies, he yeah, dies. We,
no.
I mean, come on.
No.
Yeah, he already threw the towel and pushed the ref out of the way, so...
So, you know, well, and just going back again, the production on this, and again, Alan Ritchie, producer, I get it. You know, he felt that this was an original idea, and I sort of see where he was coming from. Because
how
didn't
original
deal with,
was it?
Well, it wasn't dealing with robots. It's not part of a franchise movie.
Yeah.
He believed, and I'm not going to fault him, that he was going to be delivering something different for audiences to go to during whenever it was going to be released, you know, and getting Eminem, you know, talk about, you know, it was probably going to be micro budgeted. He could probably get Eminem to do maybe a song or two for a soundtrack. I'm happy that Eminem decided I'm going to go work on my music. I'm going to finish an album. Because he was still in the credits, and he still contributed two songs.
Yeah.
I thought,
and maybe him just as an overall performer. He may have looked into what this would take from him.
Sure.
And probably maybe music was more important, or maybe it was, you know what? I don't think that's in me.
Right.
It's a lot, right? You look at all these big boxing performances. It's years of your life, physically, mentally, emotionally.
Absolutely. And then, you know, when you have this, it's, you know, a gritty dark story about a father and daughter and redemption, which again, a lot of sports movies do hinge on redemption. It's the fall of somebody who was once big. You know, even The Natural, to an extent, is about, you know, good and evil, redemption and things like that.
Rags to riches.
Absolutely. And when you have, you know, but then the Weinsteins come on board, and they were very aggressive in getting this done and making this movie. And, you know, and hence now we have this movie. And about it opened up in over 2,700 locations in the thick of summer, you know, in July,
right.
No less. I think that's a gamble. We can talk about perception and box office. We'll do that a little bit later, too. But then when you get somebody, I think when you sign on a Jake Gyllenhaal, especially after his performance in last summer's very dark, dirty, gritty Nightcrawler, which is a fantastic, great movie. And you see his transformation in this. Like, that adds credence to this movie, more so than Eminem could have brought. And I think that can get some...
Yeah, I mean, I actually think about that. When I'm watching it, I feel like there's part of me that's like, oh, man, this guy is so good. And that, you know, it helps me enjoy the movie more, just like... thinking about his performance consciously in the theater, I'm like, man, this guy's amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So why don't we talk a little bit about performance, but even more importantly, his transformation.
Oh my goodness.
On this. What? Like, I know, you know, crazy. I mean, he gained 15 pounds of muscle in 4 months. And like, that's incredible. He was working out twice a day. And Anton Foucault was working out with him, which, you know what, I appreciate, whether because...
Well, Foucault used to be a former boxer as well.
Yeah, but I think that shows a great support for your actor.
Oh, yeah.
When your director is like, hey, man, I'm in this with you. Like, I want to see you succeed, and I'm going to help you.
And statistically, you're more successful achieving something if you have someone by your side doing the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I think that was great, but his regimen... Do you have anything about... you were talking about...
Absolutely crazy.
Yeah, let's talk about a little bit of this crazy regimen.
Yeah, so Jake Gyllenhaal went through a six-month training with Teddy Claiborne, and who's also a boxer himself as well. But he started off with three-hour training sessions every single day, one in the morning, one at night, and then throughout, for every single day. And throughout, they built his stamina and endurance, and then that got added to 6 hours a day in the morning and the night. So 6 hours total. And then also, he did 1,000 sit-ups in the morning and 1,000 sit-ups at night. So 2,000 sit-ups every single day. So his regimen is ridiculous. He didn't really have to worry about a particular diet. He had protein at night.
I would hope.
Carbs in the morning. But he was burning so many calories that his only main diet was just carbs and protein. But for 6 months, and then also he had to like lift tires, a 200-pound tire across, you know, the gym floor forever. But his transformation is absolutely ridiculous in 6 months, and he got completely ripped and putting others. Athletes to shame.
And he learned how to box.
Yeah,
at the same time, it
felt like that was a boxer.
Yeah,
that was a boxer.
I felt the same way.
That was like, and I think also we were talking about this earlier. Boxing, just the way the choreography of boxing movies has come along. I mean, that felt like a real boxing match there.
That too.
Yeah, and which is interesting in how they filmed that. But I just want to talk a little bit just Jake's transformation. Yeah. Like, he was on. Like Good Morning America, and he was like, I didn't know how to do a speed bag, like at
Those
all.
Are hard.
By the end,
I used to do a speed bag.
I've been
hard.
In a boxing class for about 8 months. I still can't. I still can't do a speed bag.
I mean,
bag.
This is a Hollywood kid who went to Harvard Westlake. Right. You know, and now looks the part of a professional light heavyweight boxer.
And he said by the end of it, and I think, and again, it's when you look at the three performances that I look at, Prisoners. Which I thought he was fantastic in Prisoners. And he just adds these nuances to characters. In Prisoners, it was funny, his character blinked a lot and it was just noticeable. Nightcrawler was the exact opposite. His eyes are always wide open, which is sort of kind of lent to that seediness, creepiness. And in this movie, again, his transformation. He was just very, he owned the role and he did look like a boxer. And again, he's able to play sympathy in a way. And again, this sort of kind of reminded me of Rocky, because he's able to get off that sympathetic note and not just be a two-tongued gorilla who can punch.
But also adding to that, sorry, that I think the trainer's name was Terry Claiborne. I think I messed that name up. But yes, Rocky compared to Southpaw, what I loved about Billy Hope is that him as a fighter in the ring, he's very angry, very aggressive type of fighting. But then that's what I loved about Maureen, his wife, brought the softer side of him.
Absolutely. Outside. And his daughter.
And the dog, that family aspect that really showed he has a soft side. He's a sensitive guy who really cares about people. He's loyal in that way. And that's what I think Adrian and was to Rocky.
Yeah.
And she always brought him back to earth whenever he was having problems and whatnot. She snapped him out of his funks and whatever.
Right.
So I think that's what Rachel McAdams did so well, was play that female more mother nature. Well, not mother.
And she too was from the streets
as well.
The nurturing aspect.
They were from the same orphanage, right?
That's where they met.
And that's a thing I know. Well, I also liked that he played a simpleton, a guy who's from an orphanage, learned to box.
Yeah.
That's his life.
Yeah.
And he has, like, a legitimate reason for that's what he does.
It sounds like Manny Pacquiao.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but let's talk about the filming of the boxing scenes too, which I found extremely fascinating. Like, they filmed the boxing scenes in real time, so they would go into the ring and they would actually like do a round, and they would film it, hit the bell, he'd go back, sit down for a minute, hit the bell again, they'd go back in. Find that very. I mean, number one for an actor, number one, if that's the way you're going to film this, which hasn't. I can't recall any boxing movie being filmed this way.
Rocky Balboa filmed this way. It was considered
revolutionary. Like, and those were actual physical hits.
Yeah, and the other...
Like, they had to drain each other's ears and all.
Oh, so, like, one of them hurt the other, and then they had to...
Stop. And I just find that it gives a gritty look to boxing in almost a first-person perspective, in a sense, by doing it. And the mere fact that they could go around and then ding... sit down, they got to go through the punches, so to speak, but you know, Jake Gyllenhaal is always, did you ever take any punches? It's like, oh yeah. It's like, oh yeah, I got a couple, you know, you get a couple in the face, and again, that's something else that as an actor, you know, you're going to have to endure a missed swing.
But I think
such.
That adds to the realistic element of acting. Because,
you get bragging
rights
for that.
Absolutely. But it goes off to the same principle as theatrical acting. When you're on stage, you get that real-time building of your character, and you're really ingrained in that. And then I think that also builds to, if you're doing it in real-time, it adds more to your character when you're actually filming it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically the producer basically said that, he took a shot to the face. He iced it and was back in the ring an hour later. And he's like, okay, yeah, come on, we're doing a boxing movie, come on. So, I mean...
We're on a time limit.
Yeah. So, again, I appreciate... I appreciate Jake's performance and transformation. And we were talking a little bit about Rachel McAdams, who to me is like sort of like this enigma, because I think she's a fine actress. And it's not that I don't enjoy seeing her in projects and movies and such, but she doesn't really, you don't see her on the marketing end of things. Like, I didn't see her much at all for Southpaw. Now, I don't watch a lot of daytime television if they had put her on those shows, but I don't even recall her on nighttime television. Like,
she's not True Detective.
Yeah, it could just be a function of her schedule.
Well, I saw her. She was also sitting next to Jake Gyllenhaal at the ESPYs. That's the extent of my knowledge of the press she did for this movie.
So, but again, she did a really good job. And I think for that death scene, you have to sell the line, "I want to go home." And you have to sell it in a way that, if you're a seasoned moviegoer, you can sort of pick up on the clue that in one way, shape, or form, it may come back. And when it does come back, you don't feel like that you were overly manipulated. And she has to sell this in a way, because that line does come back when his daughter says it to him.
Yeah.
But you have to sell that line so it's not cheesy. and that it's really heartfelt and that she wants to go home. And I think that that was the emotional heft of that scene. So then when it does come back, you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah. I think also more than that, I mean, I don't know the exact runtime of when she died, but you have to really build your character in such a short time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, I don't know, was it minute 15? I'm not even, you know.
Probably minute like 20 or so.
Minute 20. Yeah. But that's, you know, 20. That's not a lot of time to connect with the audience so that they feel, you know, like a big loss.
Well, I thought, wait, she died. Wait.
It was like 20, 25.
She was in the first reel.
Yeah, like the inciting, like she that was essentially the inciting incident. Yeah. It's just right. You built up your characters beforehand.
But I agree, you have little time to build her up. But for the amount of time that they had her, I thought they did a great job.
Yeah.
Because it shows she brought that sensitive side out of Billy Hope. And then also when he's giving his speech to everyone, he even goes into their background. So we did get learn a lot about her character in just 20 minutes.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely, which is very important again, because she's the shadow that's over everything and what helps progress the story and moving that along. And that's why I guess to a sense, knowing that it was going to be a father daughter movie as opposed to a family relationship kind of a movie, I wasn't so much as bugged about it, that being given away in the marketing and the trailer, outside of the fact that watching the trailer, I was like, why are they telling me she dies? Like, they could have had a much more impactful emotional scene, but I was like, oh, okay, this is a scene where she's going to die. The mere fact that they were able to pull it off and I got,
That you were still invested.
I was still invested because of performance, but I was like, God, had I not seen that in the trailer, like, man, that would have
been... Might have delivered something different.
Yeah, and it could have meant a little bit something else for the movie. Like, again, a boxing movie, you could have said it was just a movie about redemption. You know, they could have hidden the fact that Rachel McAdams, you know, didn't die, and they could still be showing that they're lugging stuff out of the house. He's lost all his money.
Oh, yeah.
Blah blah blah. I don't know. That was a slippery slope.
I think another great thing for Billy Hope's character is that yes, he came from the streets and from an orphanage, but also he got to that level of power and fame, and it did kind of consume him and his family, and he did get into that mindset that he was superior in a way. And then also now stripping him again, he had to realize. To lose everything, he had to gain everything back. So I think that also built a character aspect of him, not just, you know, going from rags to back to riches.
Yes. Right.
But as a character, it humbled himself in a way.
Right.
Again.
But I do think that would help us with the journey if we didn't. Because it helped me that if we didn't know Rachel McAdams was going to die.
Yeah.
That helped me on that journey. Because I'm like, oh, he's just going to be...
Me too.
He's gonna get challenged by this guy, and he'll lose to this guy, and then he'll have to it'll be like typical Rocky III.
Yeah,
totally.
And there was a lot of Rocky III in this movie.
Rocky III and Rocky V.
Yeah,
combined.
Yeah,
that was basically
completely
what it was.
Yeah. I reject the existence of Rocky V.
Yeah, I know.
Sure. We learned a lot.
I thought they were gonna play "Take Me Back," do 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 do, take me back.
How great would have that.
I would have been. Wait, what? No.
And I thought at some point. I thought at some point, 50 Cent was going to say, "Only in America."
Only in America.
I pity the fool.
Well, yeah, right. Well, we are talking performance. Let's talk about. Let's. I want to talk about Una for a bit. But you mentioned
Una
50
Lawrence.
Cent.
He's a great rapper.
Yeah. He's come a long way. No. I mean, I'm
kidding, guys. He's not a great.
No, he's not even that. Yeah,
He's actually been here
to
the studios.
To be fair, he's come a long way. You know, I've seen him in some earlier roles. I mean, in this, wasn't he in Spy?
He was in Spy.
Yeah, he was in Spy.
Yeah.
Cameo.
You know, he had a cameo, and, like, he used to mumble.
He still does.
And now, I had a hard time
did you?
He's got very nice
lines.
Teeth.
Yeah, though. I thought he was, like, better. Again... that character for me was sort of kind of weird because there was no bones about that character. He didn't like he was all up front. He says, hey, I'm where the money's going to take me, buddy. Yeah. Like, I've always been that way, but he was still not a good guy.
Yeah, but there's not, like, that much depth to that person or that character.
True. Yeah.
So it was like, well, you got to bring something to that cliche. I mean, you can be that cliche, and that's fine. I like that he didn't oversell it, which was nice. Yeah. You know,
like
he
Don
didn't need
King.
To do,
right.
he didn't need to do much, because we now know in 2015 who that person is. We have a very clear expectation. But then, as an audience, you want to go, okay, well, what are you bringing to the table to that character?
I guess what turned me off too was I really did buy him as being a friend of the family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like I really thought that he had their best interests at heart until he started pushing that HBO deal.
Yeah, it wasn't earned, the switch from friend to scumbag. It wasn't earned because they really did build him up as a friend, and then all of a sudden he's just sitting with the other guy, and it's like, okay.
And also, but Jake Gyllenhaal has a daughter and a wife.
Right.
That's all Billy Hope has.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So to present the 50 Cent character as another friend, we kind of just have to accept that to then be like, oh no, wait, he's a scumbag.
Yeah.
Jake Gyllenhaal just has these two people.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, he had his other friend
as
well.
He had a...
That supported him.
Yeah, crew of unbuilt-up characters.
Generic crew.
Yeah, generic stock characters that we didn't really get to know.
And then let's talk a little bit about Tick Willis, played by Forrest Whitaker. And again, I felt it was a solid performance. And he was doing his best to be Mickey.
Mm-hmm. Totally
in
Mickey.
In a sense.
Yeah.
You know?
And the fact that Billy Hope had to go back to a small-time gym to get a job.
Yeah.
This is Rocky.
This is Rocky
again.
Two. This is Rocky Two.
Rocky Two. Yeah. Yeah, and also there was one shot where there's the staircase going up.
Right.
And like,
oh yeah,
that's Rocky's apartment.
That's the shot. It's like the shot.
It's the exact shot for shot.
No, but
going
you know what?
And which Rocky movie was it that he was that was it? Rocky
Two.
Where he was training him to be a southpaw. Or that was one.
Rocky was always a southpaw because he trained him to switch
in the first movie and then in the second movie
and they trained him to jab in the third movie.
You know,
he didn't know how.
He didn't know how.
And I also felt let down as a southpaw by the title Southpaw.
Exactly.
You know, I was looking for that real lefty, like stance. That lefty stance. He had one almost fatal blow, but. TKO. Oh, not even a TKO, but...
No, and that was also my problem, too. I was like, Edgar Wright, as this movie was, and called Southpaw, there wasn't enough Southpaw in it to be called
Southpaw.
In any retrospect, because the Southpaw... you're called a Southpaw because it's unorthodox and almost unwanted in the world. And I see that, but I feel like there could be more... Because he's not a... Like,
he's not. I thought he was going to land.
He's not a left hand.
A left uppercut.
Yeah.
Yeah. He switched to Southpaw.
Just for one punch.
Yep.
Not even. That's
yep.
all.
I
think what happened was they finished the movie and they're like, oh, crap. Wait, we didn't even use any of the Southpaw stuff.
Right. Like,
get in there. Right. One more round. Just one lefty.
It is worth noting Eminem is left handed.
Yeah. So maybe.
I think the title and that part of it existed since 2010 when DreamWorks
had. Contract said he wouldn't do this movie as a lefty.
Probably
one
not.
Punch. He'll do one punch.
Well, I mean, if he's going to learn to box
in
4 months.
I just say for all you Tomorrowland haters who felt you didn't spend enough time in Tomorrowland, we only get one Southpaw punch in Southpaw.
One,
and that's the name of the movie.
One Southpaw.
There we go.
And I think that's exactly my point with the editing and whatnot. During the training montage, we got... maybe 10 seconds of him switching.
Like, yeah.
You got to switch to Southpaw.
Right, right.
But then we get 2 seconds of him doing Southpaw, the actual move. That wasn't enough time. So I felt, again, scenes that should have had a lot more content to it than it should have.
You know what I think? I think that sort of, I agree with what you're saying. I would say that it was missing a lot of the connective tissue.
Yeah.
It's like, it's almost like, I don't know how, if they didn't see it, or if, part of me thinks sometimes in movies like this, they get pulled out when it's like, oh, well, we have a 220-minute movie that has everything. And then we pull it down to 2 hours, it's missing all these things that we're talking about.
It
and then
it gets
dissected by people like us.
Yeah.
It's missing that part where the cop mentions that it's Hector.
Yeah.
But before we get there, too, like, I just let's I want to – Forrest Whitaker, though. I mean, did you buy him as the – I mean, because I liked him.
I bought him performance-wise.
Performance-wise.
I felt like there was a lot And probably in a 220-minute cut of this movie, there was probably a lot more to him that had that helped.
Sure.
That helped on performance alone. I bought him. And I also like that he isn't where Mickey in all the Rocky films was just a trainer who ran a gym.
Right.
And like that was his life. And he sought to like represent contenders, whereas Titus Willis, he actually just wanted to help people.
Yeah.
Help kids off the street. Right. And this is a way to do it.
Yeah. Right. And I felt that, Forrest Whitaker, he was believable. In that role. And I liked him. Again, I just couldn't. That was definitely something that I couldn't get Rocky out of my head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I want to move on to, before we get to Una, Victor Ortiz, who, if anybody who watches The Strain,
he's been here too.
He plays a very, almost a similar, tough, bravado character. He was the quote unquote villain in this movie. They almost wanted to bring him out almost to be like Clubber Lang.
I mean, that was the Clubber Lang scene. Right? Those were straight derivative, almost carbon copy scenes, except for when the gunshot happened.
Yeah. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. I don't know. Something about him, he's got a certain charisma to him visually. I don't know.
You mean Miguel Gomez was?
Miguel.
I was like, Miguel Gomez
was
not
the main
Victor
though.
Ortiz.
Oh, yeah. So who did I confuse?
Victor Ortiz was his friend.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I like Miguel. I don't know. Something Miguel. About his face really registered with me as I believed that he was that guy. I don't know. I felt like everybody outperformed their characters.
Oh, yes. Totally. Totally. And I watch The Strain. I see this guy in The Strain, and he's sort of kind of like a tough. Sometimes it's like over the top, but I felt when in this movie, I was like, oh my God, he's he totally is this role. He's, he plays it really well. He was the baddie. I just wish there was more comeuppance for him. I wish there was more comeuppance for that character. He sure as hell deserved it.
Yeah, I just wanted a more reason why he was so adamant against Billy. Granted, he wanted the title, a shot at the title, yes, but it wasn't enough to him to be blatantly disrespectful.
Clubber Lang was,
but he could have had the way he played him and the way that character felt. At some point, he needed to have an introspection of, actually, dude, I'm sorry.
Something. I was hoping that would happen, but since that never, I agree with you, and since that never happened, I was expecting. At the end, when he in the ring, he was still acting like an asshole in that last fight. If any reason there was for Jake Gyllenhaal's character to unload,
yes,
that was it. And you were gonna be, dude, you were gonna get it now. And if you can be angry anywhere, it's allowed in the ring. Go knock this block off. Knock him into tomorrow, Rock. Totally. And I didn't even get that.
I wanted him to kill him. Right. Yes.
Same here.
There was one second that I really did enjoy how his character ended. Granted, he was a big baddie. But when we finally announced that Billy Hope was the winner, we had that one quick shot, and you saw him actually fall down to his knees. I was like,
quick. I didn't even see that.
Yes, yeah. He did, though.
So quick. But that was that one shot. I was like, yes, he's literally being taken down. All right.
Well,
I accept that.
You know, it's funny. We were talking about the Rocky III comparison. What's interesting to me is that they gave you what you needed in Rocky III for that sort of, Clubber had a reason. Because Rocky was ducking him, and Rocky didn't know he was ducking him. There were layers of
right.
All of it felt like, and it was like Clubber earned that first victory, all of it, and none of those pieces were there. It's like, if you're going to rip off Rocky, then put those in there too.
You have to, for the emotional heft.
Yeah, or just make this character, if he's going to be this terrible person whose crew shoots your wife, you take his title.
Yeah.
Be that terrible person.
Exactly.
Yeah. And they tried to give him humanity and sympathy, and I'm like, I don't want to be sympathetic. I want Jake Gyllenhaal to defeat this man in every way possible.
Yeah, same here. And you're right. They tried to give him humanity for 2 seconds because when he was throwing his crew out, he was like yelling at the guy, going, "What the hell are you doing?"
At the very least, an accessory to murder.
At the
very least,
dude.
Felony murder rule. Depending on, I don't know if that's in effect in New York. I'm a lawyer, but I don't remember the felony
and
murder rule.
And how they dropped that story was ridiculous.
And that bothered me too. But let's talk a little bit now about Una Lawrence, because I really think, again, a lot of this movie is on her shoulders as the daughter. And this is a role that I feel that could have really been played too over the top and almost to the point of annoyance for a little kid. And I think that she played it, like, there were little hints for me of, like, a very young Tatum O'Neal role. And I thought she played it fabulously. And that's a good thing, because I think a lot of people, if she played it the wrong way, people may have criticized her. And I hate criticizing kids, because I feel that they're still learning this craft. There's so much to go. But she was very good. And in the scene that you talked about at the top of the show, the slap scene.
Yes.
Again, a very integral scene in this movie. It needed to be sold, because this is when, you know, our boxer is like seeing anger through somebody else's eyes. Mm. And I thought she sold it.
I was watching an interview on, I think it was Good Morning America, with Jake and Una. And he was talking about that scene. And he said, you know, it was the first time he realized he passed on his rage to his daughter. You know, and it's like it wasn't just one slap, you know, it's like multiple.
Yeah.
It was everything she had was coming out on him at that moment, in the same way that he unleashes on people.
Yeah. I thought she did, you know, with right parenting and good smart management, she could continue to have a good career. I think she really was able to stand toe to toe with Jake Gyllenhaal. But again, you really did sense that in this movie, regardless of story and whatnot, I felt there was good chemistry amongst our actors.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jake and Forrest, Jake and Rachel, Jake and Una, even Jake and 50 Cent. I thought there was a chemistry there. Yeah. And, you know, this movie could have been a hell of a lot worse.
Right. What I liked about Layla's character is that I believed her and her unfortunate situation, because in a way, she was also put in a similar situation that her father was in when he was young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because coming from an orphanage, and now she going into child care services, like not having parents, and to be thrown into that situation, I completely believed her performance, being frustrated with her own father, not having parental figures to help her out, and especially during that grieving and losing a mother. She was amazing, Una Lawrence.
I actually liked those scenes. So in some ways the best, like the court scenes and seeing her in child services, it just felt brutally real. Like how his bad decisions really are crippling this girl in a lot of ways.
And you get the anger, and she portrayed it really well without, again, some kids, they're directed in such a way in which the anger just comes off as like they're too steaming hot.
Yeah.
How do you ask a kid who, by their nature, has very limited experience emotion with what anger is and how, like, how do you ask a child to display that?
I agree. Yeah. It's tough.
Child acting is really, yeah, really, no,
she
it's had a, kind of she ridiculous.
Had a, she had an emotional intelligence well beyond her years.
Yes.
Right. Yes.
You know, and let's say she played Matilda on Broadway. Mm-hmm. Okay, so she has theatrical experience. She was, she starred in a short film with F. Murray Abraham and Ralph Macchio. It was called Penny Dreadful.
Is it?
Do you know that?
Is that a different Penny Dreadful?
Different Penny Dreadful. Throughout the show. Like,
she is part of...
Oh, she also played a young Tiffany. She played a young Pensatucky.
On Orange is the New Black. I do remember that.
I love that.
And she comes from an acting family. So she has, you know, so she has this within her blood. Again, I think with the right parenting and good solid management that takes care of her, she has a really good solid career. Now, we should probably talk about story now. You know, I think we're itching to talk about this stuff. And I said from the top, I thought that some of this plotting was trite. and we talked about how this could have been a 2 hour and 20 minute movie or so. Mm-hmm. And it was a long movie. you had even said that there was, Marissa, you talked about the pacing. There were some slow times, and, you know, there were dangling subplots that were never, ever resolved. Like the murder of
his wife.
The inciting incident of the whole thing.
Yeah. You mean the homicide that was witnessed by like 30 or 40 people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And
probably have cameras in the lobby of the hotel. Yeah.
Right.
Where did the gun go?
And this is where I go to. It just seemed that the punishment didn't fit Jake Gyllenhaal's crime because he didn't really do anything other than he lost a wife, he lost everything, and yet he's being so severely punished. But I'm like, why isn't anybody trying to figure out who the hell killed the wife? Because
let alone find that guy. His name's Hector. It's Miguel's brother.
Yeah.
They did establish that.
Yeah, like, but Jake lost his boxing license. And
yeah,
he lost.
He didn't get suspended, or at least.
No.
Yeah. Oh, you weren't involved in the fatal shooting of another boxer's wife.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
No mention of it.
A person in a hotel lobby in front of everyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, think he had like an automatic weapon in his pocket. A semi-automatic, too.
The whole. And I think that's what, once I got over, like, wow, he lost everything, and, like, how deflated I was emotionally from seeing Rachel McAdams go and not knowing that that was going to happen. And then, the next scene is the cops. So, do you know anything? All right, I guess this case is dead.
Yeah, I guess it's closed.
We're going to solve this 20 years from now in a
Billy,
cold case.
If Billy Hope can't tell us.
Right.
We're all out of ideas, guys.
That really stuck with me throughout the rest of the movie. And again, it came up to our villain didn't get his comeuppance.
No.
It wasn't that he was just disrespectful. He had a blatant hand, or his crew, or his he killed his wife, and you figured he would have, and he knew this, and you figured he was going to unload on him, especially he tried so hard to keep it professional. But I think from an audience perspective, if after he mouthed off to him, and Brennan, like, you took him out.
Yeah.
The audience, that would have been my stand-up and cheer moment.
Totally. But that goes against the other thing we're learning, is that Billy Hope as a character just isn't... Billy Hope as a person isn't managing his rage correctly. And that's how he's boxing, and that's how he learns to box and defeat an opponent like a man.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Which would make more sense if we gave Miguel a little more humanity. And it was his brother, and we had a little more peace. That it was his brother Hector, and he had nothing to do with it. And, like, he had to suffer, too. And, like, this is two people colliding in the wake of an ultimate tragedy.
To, like, a hit, you know what I mean? It was almost like a hit. It was so far-fetched. It was like, you know what I liked about Rocky III? Again, you know, you go back to Rocky III. Clubber Lang pushes Mickey, but he's not trying to kill him. You know, no. That wasn't his intention in any way.
Caught up in the moment.
That he died helps build up the emotional attachment for the audience, but it doesn't have us go, that guy is a murderer.
It didn't, but it was still a dick move.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, Marissa, your thoughts? Like, you know, I mean...
Yes, I think that... We, you know, American cinema storytelling, we're so used to having the bad guy getting justice in the end. And we didn't get that, so I think that's where all of our frustration lies.
Yeah.
But also, I saw this moment as maybe it's not okay that they just dropped it, but I can understand why they did. Because it was more so move off of the... Because then it could just get into a whole investigation, murder type of storytelling, which takes us away from what the character is. Because after this whole... We lose this part of the movie, it's more so just about Billy Hope and his whole journey to getting back to where he started.
But I would figure that Billy Hope would really want to put forth... Who the hell killed my wife?
And for one minute before it turned into the Punisher.
Right. He knows, though. And then he gets into a car and tries to kill that person.
Which was a really good scene. But after you decide, after you realize, like, Jesus, I'm going to be crossing a line, you've got to let somebody... Again, it would have been okay for me if he let the villain know, listen, asshole, I know... You had a hand in this. bam,
you broke
and then
heart.
Done.
Yeah, even in the ring, something like that.
Because if he's going to mouth off to him, because he's been playing it sort of tempered. Or, I don't know. It was a subplot that sort of kind of bothered
me. The flip side
is
he tried to kill himself after not killing us.
Right.
And so, you know, once you cross that line into I tried to kill myself and end things, and then I lost my daughter, it is almost like it was about him getting his daughter back at that point, you know. So,
it just
which
became
I like.
The journey of Billy Hope after that.
Sure, sure. Although, but you would hope that some of that journey would be for the bad guys to pay for, like, and again, it didn't have to turn into a Punisher movie, to a revenge movie, but just so that there was some, because they're outside of the audience, those, he's like the only, they're like the only two characters that know, well, plus the guy that actually pulled the trigger.
And like 50 people in that lobby. But we don't know those people. We don't see those people.
We don't see those people. My other dangling subplot in this movie, which is a part that really put the brakes on as far as pacing for me, because I was like, what the hell? Come on. Was Hoppy. Ooh. Hoppy. I was like, okay, so we introduced this kid. Oh, cute enough kid. I thought maybe he's going to make it to the end. He's going to be in the ring giving water or whatnot. Mm-hmm. And then, then Hoppy gets killed. We learn off, you know, he gets killed off screen by his father and stuff. And then all of a sudden, Forrest Whitaker goes into this whole thing. I'm like, well, so long, Hoppy. We hardly even knew you.
Yeah, we don't
and
care
I was
about
like,
Hoppy.
What the hell? I mean.
No, but that, okay. I can understand where you're coming from. That's where I saw Tick Willis as why he took in Billy Hope, because he's a guy who's been through the ringer, literally, and he's seen the past, and he's experienced people that have come through his life that have struggled and have come from dark past and whatnot. So also in a way too, for like parallels, there's Billy Hope who had his past, and then Hoppy who come from a bad background as well. So I see Tick being like, yes, I can help these people out and give them a chance, whether it be training in my gym and whatnot. So to see that he wanted Billy Hope to have some, you know, a better ending as well.
I believe that. I see what you're saying, and I get that, and that's great insight. I would just say, why have the character if you're gonna have like that would have been great dialogue at the bar, going like Tick going to. To Jake's character going, like the Billy Hope going, you know why I do this? I don't do this for the prestige. The reason why I don't train pros is because I knew this young kid. His name was Hoppy.
Mm-hmm.
And this kid came from a broken background, blah, blah, blah. It would have been a 5-minute dialogue, a nice monologue. And he goes, and he was killed because he stepped in front of a bullet that was meant for his mom. From his dad. And then, that's why I do this job. But instead, we get introduced to a kid who sort of befriends Billy Hope, who then dies, and then we get this whole monologue, and I'm like going, wait, isn't there another movie? Wait, isn't there a murder that needs to be, like, that's more important than this?
And then the next scene, there's no more Hoppy.
No more Hoppy.
We're moving on.
And again, that's why I say editing room floor. Like, it feels like there was one other scene where Hoppy and Jake Gyllenhaal were talking about their childhoods, and he's like, you know, we are the same, you and I, you know, something. Yeah. And it's like, you know, you just gotta stick with what you're doing and it'll all work out in the end, Hoppy. And then a day later.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
that's where I saw the similarities. It was like Hoppy is the younger version.
I want to see the unedited version for the extended Hoppy cut.
That's what they're going to call it.
The Hoppy cut.
There's got to be a Hoppy cut.
Also, so, I think.
I'd like to think there was a
also,
Hoppy
I think
cut,
they named him. They named him Hoppy as an homage to. Because if this were going to be a continuation of 8 Mile, there was a B-Rabbit in
B-Rabbit 8 Rabbit and Hoppy.
B-Rabbit and Hoppy.
Can I ask if it bothered
Very
anyone
true.
Else that his name was Billy Hope?
Yeah.
Like, Hope. Billy
Symbolism.
The Great, why didn't we put White in there? It's like so
well,
stupid.
But they had, they had a bunch of inserts.
I'm just
of,
saying, it's like so ridiculous.
Also, there's a
and
lot
just
of.
And just Hope, the symbolism.
It hit
so.
You like a Southpaw punch?
Yeah,
to the
it hit me like a Southpaw.
There's a lot of stuff on paper with this movie
right.
that the performances do elevate.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Like,
oh, absolutely.
Like that very first scene where it's. He grew up in a orphanage in Hell's Kitchen,
right?
Which is only 10 miles away from Madison Square Garden, but it's more like a million miles,
yeah. right?
On paper, that seems really, really cheesy,
right?
Yeah, I hope he didn't say 10 miles. It's like 10 blocks.
Yeah, I think they. I'm not the direct quote.
I think it was 8 miles.
Well, it's 10 blocks.
It's literally ten.
It's
yeah,
literally
it is
10 blocks.
So. Well, not because they shot this whole movie in Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
but.
So. No, I mean, there were so many things on the nose on paper in this, you know, trite. Every cliche in the book was in this
screenplay. Yeah. Yeah. Everyone, yeah. Like everyone you could think of, yeah. Almost.
And again, that, you know, as, and for sports, I've said this when we were doing McFarland, and I forget what other, we've done a handful of sports films. Pardon me. I think they're hard to do, because here's the deal. You either win, you lose, or you draw. That's it. So you've got to tell a story that by the end, whether it be win, lose, or draw, you know that that's one of the outcomes that's going to happen. So some of the suspense is sort of kind of gone, so you have to build up your character in such a way that you care when he or she win, loses, or draws, or if it's a team. Like, you know, yeah. I go back, you know, to the Bad News Bears. What makes the Bad News Bears such a wonderful sports film and satire is not that they win, but they actually lose the game, but they're the winners.
Yeah.
You come off, and they're the adults, not the adults who are coaching. Rocky, it's technically a draw, and it goes to the previous, it goes to the standing champ. And but to Rocky,
he wins,
you know? Yeah. I mean, and there's the, like, it wasn't so much about winning, it was just staying in the ring.
Yeah.
And, like, I get emotional thinking about it.
Yeah.
And this movie didn't...
I mean, this movie had the stem of... It had the stem of Jake Gyllenhaal is beating up his opponents, but he's not defeating them.
Mm-hmm.
He's letting them punch him until he gets angry enough to unleash that anger on them.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just not a good, healthy way to live your life.
Yeah,
I think they were stuck trying to get to the root of his anger and all that stuff, and like they never really got there, you know. But for me, I was just like, I just want him to get his daughter back.
Same
here. Yeah. I was like, I just want him to get his daughter. I don't even.
And
care
then he
if
gets
he
his
wins.
Daughter back. His daughter back, and then there's a big fight.
Yeah.
Like right. Inserted or the daughter back felt inserted, depending on who you ask.
Like, I just want, that was to me, like, the resolution. Like, just get his daughter back. The guy's, like, he redeemed himself already.
And Moneypenny was
well,
in
he
this
spent
movie.
The whole, he spent most of the movie just trying to get his daughter back.
Right.
And then they just, like, tacked the fight scene at the end.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's like, okay, now I've got acceptance from my daughter. Or now I have, acceptance from Adrian, and I'm going to go into the ring, and
win, Daddy.
Yeah, win, Daddy.
Win.
So, stuff just sort of
I also feel like
me.
I also feel like it would have shown an incredible amount of restraint to have him lose on points at the end of it, at the end of the big fight.
Yeah.
Because if it's about him winning, he won. He got his daughter back.
Right.
So to put him back on top, and I know the trope for him to win everything makes just as much sense, but I would have enjoyed the self restraint to be like, split decision, he lost by 2 points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he walks away with his daughter.
He walks away with his daughter and his life back.
Yeah,
and he lives to fight another day. There's gonna be a rematch because it went to a split decision, and that's not what this movie isn't about. Him getting his belt back.
Right. Yeah,
and I don't know.
It could. It
I saw it as more so.
Movie.
He was winning both his personal and professional lives.
Yeah,
back.
Yeah.
So you know. So we talked plotting, and yeah, I mean, and these are the things that really bothered me in this movie. Where I can, you know, I thankfully can say that the performances totally outshined this script and or screen. You know, the script and screenplay, which is a good thing. From an editing standpoint. You know, John Rafoa edited this film. I thought that, again, I thought boxing was filmed very well. I did want more out of the training sequences.
Mm-hmm. I wanted more. I like flipping tires. I want to see more non-traditional.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
I wanted to see a full 4.5 minute song. You know,
yeah.
Training,
there's no
montage,
easy way
like,
out.
Right. Yeah, I mean, come on. There's he's got to climb.
Now.
Yeah, he's got to climb something or chop something.
Right.
He's got to run in the snow.
Yeah.
Parts on fire.
He's got to be upside down.
Parts on fire. But I did think that it was edited well. Even more so, Mauro Fiore, the director of the DP, the cinematography. This movie did look good.
Oh, this movie looked great.
It felt like a legit,
beautiful.
You know, big budget. You know, boxing movie. It was great.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it did remind me of the first Rocky.
Yeah.
The first Rocky has grit.
He's had a lot of grit this movie.
And this movie had that grit as well. But even in the scenes, like the slow scenes, I really like the way There was a scene at the beginning of the movie with Billy and his daughter in her bedroom. Mm. And she had, like, this soft lighting. And she was talking, like, geez, Dad, you got really beat up. And he goes, yeah, you ought to see the other guy. Again, it's a cliche line that we've heard before. But it worked. And I think partly by the way that that shot was filmed and the way that it looked. So, and it gave this other side of Billy Hope. And then, but then Rachel McAdams' character, she comes and she goes, he goes, you want to see the other guy? She goes, no, you won't. No. So, you know, it
and
was a nice
that's
scene.
What I loved about this film. They let some scenes need to breathe. Like, they gave that room that to build the emotional level that we needed to get to. But also, again, going back to the pacing, I felt that there were some things that were obviously probably cut out. And from it going now they completely rushed a 6 month deal to, or six yeah, week yeah, sorry yeah. sorry a 6 week deal from HBO. They had to set that all up. Yeah. Where were the press conferences? Where was the announcement to that? I mean, we got the short
angry
training
press conference. I would have murder.
We got the
important one.
I would have loved to see that.
We got
press
a short
conference.
Training montage sequence of him for the fight, but it was completely rushed. It's like, okay, now this the humongous fight at the big arena again in Las Vegas of all places.
Right.
It's like there should have been more conference. To build up to the big.
This is my impression
scene.
Of that. Miguel, there are rumors that you had something to do with the death of his wife in the hotel. Well, if she died, she died.
She died. Yep. Just in that moment. She died.
Yeah. I also like the naked twist. There's so much from Rocky in this.
So much. Yeah.
Naked shower scene with him hunched
down. And then also when he's running out in the streets in gray sweatpants.
Of course. Just
with the hood.
He didn't eat any raw eggs, though.
Yeah, he didn't do any raw eggs, and he wasn't chasing any chickens.
We know better about that.
We had the jump rope scene, too.
Yeah, definitely the jump rope scene.
I like that thing with where he tied the ropes in the ring. That was
new. That was a newer one.
I like that. But I want to talk about, the training scene and such, because this is bringing me into music. Not the Eminem score, but I want to talk about the James Horner score. This is the late James Horner, who sadly passed away recently, plane accident, I believe. And this man has brought so much to cinema. He's meant so much to my movie going, whether it be Wrath of Khan or Aliens, and a plethora of more. In this movie, he gets a thank you at the end. He gets a little memorial. And I believe he has the score for Antoine's Magnificent Seven. Already in the can for him. And he enjoyed working with Anton Fuqua. There were snippets of score in this movie, and I was hearing there wasn't enough for me. I wanted, like, if you're going to go the Rocky route, you got to use a little bit of, like, you got to use that orchestral score to help swell up the emotion. Mm. Like, okay, maybe you don't do it during the training, because maybe that's, you know, too obvious, but what wasn't obvious in this movie?
That you're going to manipulate.
You're going to manipulate.
Yeah.
Do a one-off Rocky
fan. But there seemed to be a hint of it in James Horner's score. Am I just completely
off
base? Because I didn't relate to the Eminem rap song. It didn't fit to me.
I
remember the Eminem song from the trailers, because that was heavily promoted in that way. But I didn't realize James Horner scored, you know, a theme to this movie until the credits started.
Yeah.
And they announced to James.
According to the trivia section of IMDb, which has been known to be faulty, says the director had no money to pay James Horner to compose the film due to the film's short budget.
Right.
However, James didn't care, as he loved the idea and decided to do it for free.
Wow.
He said, look, I love the movie. I love the father-daughter relationship. He goes, don't worry about the money. I'm just going to do it. And he did it.
What a man.
That's incredible.
It really is, and it really punctuates. I love movie scores. I collect soundtracks. And his passing, you know, because it came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bummer. I wished it was utilized more. I wish I heard more of it.
Right, and especially for a film like this, where she's more heavily dramatic, it's a perfect opportunity to use it for transitional scenes, going from more emotional to emotional. Yeah, I believe.
Yeah.
I agree.
So, and again, for me, I could have done, to me, orchestral when you're in this type of a movie, which is supposed to be emotional. I think a good James Horner orchestral score would have lent more impact than an Eminem. But that's just me. I'm sure there's tons of people out there who think I'm off my rocker.
Yeah, I like the Eminem song. I really dug them.
The Eminem song felt a tad out of place for me.
That's what it was.
Just because of that score. But at the same time, I was like, oh, yeah, he produced the movie.
He
produced the movie there.
He gave him two songs.
He was supposed to be part of the movie.
It's literally on the billboard. It's on the billboard, Southpaw, with music by Eminem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about awareness of this movie, and perhaps we'll talk legacy, if any. Mm-hmm. So the Weinstein Company released this movie. Its production budget was $30 million, all in with hard drives and advertising, about $55 million. Okay. It came in at number 5. Domestic box office came in at number 5. Its opening weekend gross was $16.7 million, and to date it's about $23 million estimated. No worldwide box office yet. Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 58%, which I think
about right. But the audience gave it an 83.
It gave it a cinema score of an A.
I actually like CinemaScore more than
I think,
because Rotten Tomatoes, to me, I always, because it's trying to quantify yes or no, but still use numbers.
Yeah,
for me, Rotten Tomatoes, I'm always like, it's 58, but I'm like, that's a yes.
I don't want to give away too many secrets, but don't think for a sec that studios don't have their buy-ins to Rotten Tomatoes, where they have publicity teams hitting yes.
Yeah, I feel more.
I'm just saying. Oh, yeah. Just, you know, it could happen. It could happen. It's a good
ballpark.
But
cinema,
but cinema score is,
I
would
give the performances
audience
definitely an A.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I can't ask this of you because you're pretty much an empty theater. How crowded was your theater?
My theater, it was probably last Friday morning. So it was last Friday morning, the Universal City Walk, like 20 or 30 people. But it was literally the Friday morning it opened.
Right.
But it was like maybe noon.
Okay.
You wouldn't expect that much on a weekday.
But was there, I guess what I'm getting at, I'm trying to do my own poll for audience reaction. Like, did people cheer at the end?
No, nothing like that.
I went to like a 7:30 screening at night, so it was pretty decently full. Not all, sold out, but there was a good amount, probably around 20, 30
Did people cheer at the end? Was
did
there
you feel
like
them enjoying
people or clapped at the end? Okay. Yeah.
I could. That's what I was saying. Like, you tell these things.
Did your entire audience?
That was good. Was that good for you? That was good. Yeah. Did you enjoy that?
Yeah. Clap of one. Yeah. When I saw it, it was a packed house. There was applause, but it wasn't overwhelming. It wasn't like, yeah, oh my God. I wanted to walk out of the theater feeling really, really good. Like, great. And again, I'll throw back to McFarlane. Like, that movie was about running, and that movie got me emotionally involved in it. And I
but
still
that
think
movie
it's
had, like, yeah!
It did.
It really had that moment.
It really did. So let's talk a little bit. We talked about the performances. What are your thoughts on it? I mean, do you think that because of trite story and screenplay, do you think that hurts somebody's, like, Jake Gyllenhaal's chance for any type of nomination come into the air? Do you think he's nominatable? And do you think that the story could hurt those chances?
Oof. I think not being released during like the more or less official Oscar season, which is later in the fall, that's already kind of hurting him for any nomination. But that doesn't stop people.
Right.
Doesn't stop nominations in the past.
Well, we like physical transformations. We know that.
We like
redemption stories. And I think also Jake Gyllenhaal is having what we'd call a moment.
Yes.
You know, I think he's having a moment right now. He's at the apex of his career.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, he really is, for his generation of actors, he's really stepping up to the top of that pile. And I think
people in the industry tend to want to acknowledge that when that happens.
I agree. You know, the other thing too, we have to think, I mean, this is a Weinstein movie.
Yep.
Though they will push.
Oh, well, you know, but they have Hateful Eight, which I have a feeling that they will spend some tender loving care on that movie. We've yet to see it, but it's Quentin Tarantino, so you expect good things from it. It just makes me wonder, you know, they have love for Southpaw. You know, come award season.
Love for boxing movies in general.
Yeah. And I just wonder, will the Weinsteins, you know, give a little TLC to Jake and try to get the nomination, even though they do have, like, you know, I forget when Hateful Eight is coming out. It's either November, December.
Yeah, like that prime time you release Oscar bait.
You'd have to figure that was part of the convo. I mean, I don't know how these convos go with these A-list actors and the Weinsteins, you know, if they're sitting there. But you'd have to figure that was part of the initial sell.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be your Oscar movie.
Mm-hmm.
I would think. I would think that was probably. Well, yeah, he's already.
Mm-hmm.
Was he nominated for Brokeback?
I don't know. We'd have to look it up.
I think Heath Ledger.
Golden Globes, though.
Golden Globes, definitely.
He probably got a Golden Globe for that.
But if you also
think about it, this is a Weinstein movie about boxing. I recall the last one that they did was The Fighter.
Right.
Yeah. It was also Weinstein plus boxing. Was that Weinstein?
The Fighter? I thought that was released by Paramount.
I thought that was a Paramount picture.
The principal photography and international distribution rights were to Weinstein for The Fighter. But again, that movie did great back in 2010. Uh-huh. So many nominations, and Mark Wahlberg got a nomination for Best Actor.
That was also a true story.
Yeah. Yes,
which always helps. You say based on a true story, it's already like, you know, oh, okay, for some reason that makes it more worthy, the acting role.
And you had another great transformation in Christian Bell.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, and I think when you look at The Fighter and you look at Southpaw.
Dickie.
You know, The Fighter is just a damn fine, damn good movie.
Yeah, and it has, interesting characters we haven't seen before.
Right.
I think we're a subsection of the boxing world we haven't seen before, whereas this was exactly what we've seen before.
That just happened to be studded with some solid performances.
Yeah.
It was one of the things I was thinking about. I was like, God, you know, Jake was so good in his past three movies. You know, he's eventually going to get to that point where, you know, and now accepting the award for Best Actor.
I don't know if this is it, but it's going to happen.
It'll eventually happen. You know, and you have to appreciate his, not only his commitment, but he went out to, he marketed it. He was on GMA. He was on Howard Stern. He was on the Howard Stern show. He gave like an hour and a half plus interview, and he comes off as being just this down to earth like guy. He tends to really like he loves supporting kids and all that stuff, and that comes through. And like you said, Hollywood loves that person.
Everybody likes Jake.
We're talking, you know.
There's really not one movie of Jake's.
He makes good choices. That's Prince of Persia.
That was a fun movie.
That was a great movie.
And that was a great transformation as well.
Yes.
That was fun.
Although I am reading IndieWire's doing best actor predictions. Jake Gyllenhaal is on this list.
Okay.
It's about a 30-person list.
30 people.
Including Eddie Redmayne. Including Joseph Gordon-Levitt twice for both The Walk and Snowden, Tom Hiddleston, Jack O'Connell, Will Smith, Brad Pitt, the usual suspects for these lists in August.
You have to remember, we're only in the middle of 2015. We still have the rest of the year and actual Oscar season.
Yeah, which is why you're talking about timing. It's not great. People are going to forget this movie by December or January.
If you're selling this movie on the Oscar buzz, you don't release it now.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, and I'm, you know, I am going to bring up something that you and I were talking about. So the legacy, because we said, you and I were talking about this.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I don't know how you can compare that, but I'm going to throw it out there anyways, because it's still a good point for the sake of our conversation and for anybody who's watching and listening. You know, the legacy of boxing movies.
I thought of my dad when you said that, by the way.
Oh, okay.
It just made me think he's the kind of guy that'll probably watch this when it's on TV.
Right.
He's not like super critical. He's not sitting here like us dissecting it.
Right.
Because it's a solid boxing movie.
Okay. How do you put it in the pantheon of like sports movies and then the subcategory of boxing movies?
In the subcategory of boxing movie, it is better than a lot of subpar boxing. You know, it's in the top 70%.
Wow, that's yeah, and, okay.
Yeah, I agree. Or,
yeah. Let's so okay, so it's definitely not as good as The Fighter.
No.
And it might be better than Rocky 5 or 6.
Rocky 5 doesn't
so
exist.
Much better right. than
it's
five.
On par with
so much better right. than 5.
So okay, okay, so it's somewhere there. What other boxing
but
movies?
But it's not better.
Cinderella Man, Million Dollar Baby.
You know, I didn't love Million Dollar Baby.
Raging Bull.
I didn't love Million Dollar Baby.
Play it to the bone.
Play it yep. to the bone, yeah. But there's
Diggs
one other.
Town. I like Digstown. You know that's what? A good movie.
Digstown's a fun
yeah,
movie,
that's
man.
A fun,
there's not
totally
many,
different genre.
So we got the two really people who yeah. saw Digstown.
Yeah.
But there was one other movie
there's
that we haven't
champ.
Yet. Thank you.
Yeah.
We have not mentioned its closeness to The Champ.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which again, a movie that if you're not crying at the end of John Voight's Champ with yeah. Ricky Schroeder.
Yeah.
I mean.
Young.
Oh my God.
He's so young.
And that movie, again, but that movie delivers an emotional heft that is a story about redemption and trying yeah. to get your son yeah. back.
Yeah.
Like this movie, again, I've seen the movie done in better movies.
Yeah.
I've
Wasn't there a Channing Tatum boxing movie as well?
Step Up.
Yeah,
I will say for Southpaw, I think technically for the fighting aspect of boxing, it was way better than, way more memorable than Fighter, for me personally.
It is way better than Annapolis. And
okay,
I was yeah. in Annapolis.
Okay,
and even I'm like, no, it beats Annapolis.
Yeah, I think for the technical, visual, cinematography, and actual physical fighting aspect yeah. of it, I think it's better than a lot of boxing,
yeah,
other boxing movies.
No, I think it's going to live on as a TNT weekend, you know, while you're doing other stuff.
Yeah.
Sure. Watch.
Yeah.
If it happens to be on while you're flipping the channel, which I don't know if people still flip channels, but that's where I feel
yeah.
that it lives.
HBO.
I don't feel like I would ever choose Netflix to...
Yeah.
watch this.
Yeah, I know I won't buy the Blu-ray, but well, I think we've is there anything else that I may have missed that somebody was itching to really talk about? I want to throw it to my again fabulous panel of hosts here. Thank you so
Thank
much
you.
For coming
Thanks
on
for
in. Marissa, it's a wonderful to have a nice female perspective on a boxing movie. So
yeah, well, I do like boxing.
Much. Yeah.
So,
so is there anything that you wanted to talk about that we may not have gotten to?
Are we excited about Creed?
So excited.
Yes. Are we all excited about Creed?
So excited.
Yes.
Like
yeah.
every
then
time
that's
I
all,
watch
yeah.
that trailer, I legitimately freak out.
Take it
I'm
back.
So excited.
Yeah. No. I think once Creed comes out, you know, whatever we're talking about Southpaw may be just forgotten.
Is that this year? Is it just getting released?
That feels
year?
Like a Christmas release.
Yeah.
Let me
yeah,
click.
Yeah. So that's later this year.
So.
I enjoyed this film.
Yeah.
Also, just all the hard work that everyone put in.
These are our parting
Jake,
thoughts.
Yeah, especially Jake Gyllenhaal and how much research and physical time he put into creating this character. And also, he did go to the Manny Pacquiao Floyd Mayweather fight boxing match back in May, a couple months ago
yeah.
of this year. So, like, he really did so much research, and it definitely showed. And that is what I would definitely nominate him an Oscar for. So.
And before we go on, you brought up something that we didn't talk about. Where does this fall in, do you think, within Antoine Fuqua's career as a director? I mean, the guy, let's face it, the guy's done a few films.
Training yeah. Day, hello.
Yeah.
yeah. So.
I would put it behind, definitely behind Training Day.
Yeah.
But it's... It's definitely up there, though, because there are other films that, yeah, okay, for me personally, they're okay, but I think Training Day is definitely one of the better
ones. But I think this is a success visual, like, a not, because sometimes in movies, to be a success, you just have to be a not failure.
Yeah.
Like, financially speaking, even after marketing, they're $55 million in the hole.
Right.
They're going to make that back before DVD sales,
yeah.
so... But that allows the director the freedom to do whatever
sure.
he wants to do next.
I agree. I think it's a big win for him, actually, because
yeah.
it felt like a big movie. It felt like a big movie, and it felt like it worked. Because big movie, like the bigger the movie, you know, the less it's going to be a critical success in most cases. It's hard for those to both, you know, parallel on work.
But
on
what's important
tracks.
To him is he strikes me as an actor's director as well.
Oh, sure.
That if an actor didn't know about him or wasn't as attuned to him as a director, they are now.
Yeah.
Because everyone's talking about Jake Gyllenhaal and how good a performance and how good these performances are. And that's a testament to him as a director.
And let's put this into a little bit of perspective, too. I mean, he's coming off of The Equalizer, which is a really huge hit. Probably a little bit more in the budget for Equalizer. Denzel Washington. You know, I was thinking that Denzel could have played this role.
Forest Whitaker, you're saying?
No. For
Oh, you
for,
mean when he was younger?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you know, Denzel can carry off a lot, but I was thinking, like, you know, he's going from Equalizer to essentially a little bit more of an independent movie, you know, because it's a smaller scale movie. Hell, if you can't pay your composer... because of budget, let's be real. So, and then his next movie is going to be The Magnificent Seven, which I'm going to assume has a little bit bigger budget than what this did. So I think for him, this was probably a great chance to do a smaller movie and be a little bit, try to be a little bit more creative and get some shots and film boxing.
Well, I like the fact that this movie was more family driven and more personal type of relatable story compared to his other films where like bigger epic scale that deals with like world geopolitics and world things. I mean, if you go like Olympus Has Fallen and Training Day, they're big. Bigger scale type
of story.
Can I
quickly say I think Olympus Has Fallen is underrated?
I loved Olympus Has Fallen.
I feel like
Which White House destruction movie?
No, because
that
always happens, right?
I genuinely don't remember.
It was the good one.
Was White House Down not
White
the good
House
one?
White House was not good.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think with Antoine Fuqua, I mean, he's had a really great career in especially the way he manages which movie he picks to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because he can do An Olympus Has Fallen, and then he can do Southpaw. He can do a smaller movie, and now he's doing Magnificent Seven. He's definitely a director that I always enjoy. Like, oh, when I see his name, I said, oh, okay, it's going to look good. I'm in.
Also, $30 million in Pennsylvania under those tax credits is more like you get a lot more for your dollar if you go to Pennsylvania.
So, all right, well, we'll get back to
our
finals.
You work for the PA.
I'm from Philadelphia. And I got into the movie business initially because of that tax credit.
Because
stuff came to town. Annapolis actually came to town.
If you want to make a $30 million movie, feel like a $60 million.
We'll pay you in cheese sticks.
Not so much, you know.
Whiz.
Unless you're in Pittsburgh.
I'll
pay you whatever Pittsburgh has.
I'm a big Philly guy, too.
So your parting shots.
My parting thoughts. I think this movie's gonna hold up pretty well.
Okay,
and it's gonna go down as a performance movie with some boxing, and I'm kind of okay with that. I'm okay with like if you really want, you can 2, 3, 4 years from now, you might kind of forget about this because a lot of movies I like to say get lost in an Oscar shuffle.
Mm-hmm.
That like there are movies like this that it's the movie's okay, but Jake Gyllenhaal he might win an Oscar.
Right.
And then some people watch it for that, but sometimes if Jake Gyllenhaal doesn't get nominated for an Oscar, the movie kind of disappears for a minute.
Right.
And I think this might be one of those movies, assuming Jake Gyllenhaal doesn't get nominated for an Oscar, which he might.
He might.
He's on the short list of 50 actors.
That's great. Your final thoughts?
My final thoughts are, if you haven't seen it, I'd say go see it. That's where I'm at with it. I'm not, you know, going to say this is going to be the best movie, but I think it's an enjoyable watch, especially if you like sports, boxing.
Yeah, and, you know, to me, there's not much outside of seeing this for performance. You know, I mean, the performances were strong. I just wish that they weren't caught up in such a... I've been there, seen it in other movies better. I liked your compared to, this is the thing that's going to be on TNT on a Saturday night or something. And
HBO,
you know,
for sure.
Yeah, well, it'll be on the cable outlets and play well. I just wish, I don't know, I was hoping for more. I wished for more. You know, I got the performances that I wanted. Mm-hmm. I wanted more emotional lift out of this and better plotting. So that is it for this episode of Anatomy of a Movie. Thank you very much for watching, listening, tuning in. Please stay tuned for more Anatomy of Movies. I mean, we still have August. We still have Mission Impossible 5. We've got Vacation. sans National Lampoon, but just Vacation. Mm. We got a bunch of other, American Ultra. We got a bunch of movies between now
Star
and
Wars.
Yeah, and that's the end of the year. I'm just talking like summer.
Straight Out of Compton, another movie. Another movie I appeared in.
So really,
I was background. Oh, okay. Good.
So
NWA.
So
he was the fifth member.
No big deal. No big deal.
You can see we're, again. Thank you very much, folks. I mean, this is a great panel. Hope you enjoyed it as well. Please comment. Please comment. Let us know what you thought of Southpaw. Am I out of my mind? Is this a much better movie than I think? Do you agree with them? You know, tell us what you think. We do read these and answer back. Marissa, where can people find you outside of Popcorn Talk and Anatomy
Movie?
You
can follow me on Twitter at SerafiniTV, and you can follow all of us here at Anatomy Movie on Twitter at Movie Anatomy.
You guys can follow me at Steve Kaufman. That is KaufMann. And I do a lot of stuff at AfterBuzz TV, and I tweet about it fairly regularly.
Awesome.
You can find me on Twitter at MattRitter1, and I will be hosting the AfterBuzz panel for Wet Hot American Summer, which I think we're going to be starting on Monday.
Sweet. And you can find me at DMovies1701, and always here at Anatomy of a Movie at the Popcorn Talk Network. Thank you very much for tuning in. We'll see you at the movies next time. Bye.
Bye. Let me self-empower you. When you're down and they're trying to clown the fuck out of you. When you feel like you're running out of fuel. I saw you out of these doubts. You're converted to gunpowder.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the rest of the Anatomy of a Movie staff, we would like to thank you for listening and subscribing to the show. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to email or tweet us. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been Anatomy of a Movie.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.